My name is Virginia Cornett, and I am chairperson of the Oral History Project for the Louisville Unit of the Women's Overseas Service League. Today's date is March 16, 1983. I am interviewing Genevieve Volker of Louisville, Kentucky. Jenny, we have a list of questions to ask you, but before we begin, would you please fill us in on your background?
All right. I was born in Vermillion, South Dakota. After I graduated from high school, I attended the University of South Dakota for 1 year. After that, I was accepted at St. Mary's Hospital School of Nursing in Rochester, Minnesota. I graduated in 1940 and worked at the hospital for 2 years as a head nurse. And then on Pearl Harbor Day, we were having a bit nice party, Pearl Harbor Day. And at that time, then we immediately all, none of us had volunteered to go into the service prior to that. And as something that I look back on that I think is really rather interesting, speaking about the Red Cross, as soon as we graduated from nursing, they were trying to get us to become members of the Red Cross, being young and careless and carefree and obstinate. There was no way we were going to be long as if our Red Cross, for some strange reason. Well, the day that Sunday, Pearl Harbor Day, came, and the next morning, I remember very vividly walking into the director of nurses' office and saying, I would like to become a member of the American Red Cross, and I would like to, because I want to volunteer in the Army Nurse Corps. So we took care of that. I didn't go out immediately because the Mayo Clinic had a unit, and they were going to go, they were going to get this unit together, and they were going to go, and I would be a member of that unit. Also, my father was ill, and I thought, well, that I probably shouldn't leave until, am I giving too much information? Until we actually knew what was going to happen. So anyway, then he died up to in July. And the Mayo Clinic unit had not been activated yet, and I was getting very impatient sitting around Rochester working. And I thought, I can't stand this or tolerate this anymore. So I went ahead and requested that I leave the Mayo Clinic unit and just go ahead and go into the a regular Army unit. So I received my orders to go to Camp Pryor, Missouri. And I reported there on September the 9th, 1942. And there was no particular unit involved. I was just in a regular Army Nurse Corps. So I was there only about a week, at which time I received orders and was transferred to the Air Force Base in Sioux City, Iowa, which was 30 miles from my home, which rather distressed me because I had planned to see the world. And so then I spent a year and a half at the Army Hospital at the Air Force Base in Sioux City. There were five of us sent from Camp Pryor, Missouri to open the hospital, 5 nurses. The hospital had been open, I think, for about probably 4 weeks, staffed by the doctors and the corpsmen. And the Army corpsmen resented us very much because they had everything all arranged and they thought that they were doing well. And we of course, didn't resent them at all. We really enjoyed them. But finally, they became our very good friends. Then I never really had any desire to serve overseas because, frankly, I didn't really know what was going to happen. I always sort of like to know things. And however, that decision was made for me by my chief nurse, who wasn't really too fond of me after a while. So she, three of us were shall we say, sent overseas. First was a marvelous thing. Ultimately, all things do have come to a good ending.
Jenny, how long did you serve in the Nurse Corps, and where are some of the different places you served?
We left for overseas on the 7th of March from, I have written down Camp Stone, I think it was in San Francisco, and we were on the, we went on the Lure Line, which was very lovely. It had been a very lovely liner, and with but there were 5,000 troops aboard. There were 14 of us in the stateroom, and so we were very happy 13 days later when we sighted New Guinea. And some of the enlisted men on the shore at New Guinea came out to greet us in boats and kept hollering, "You'll be sorry, you'll be sorry." But we were, we were all very happy to dock, I believe. So we stayed in Melny Bay and worked on detached service until September of 1944, when we established our permanent hospital at Hollandia, New Guinea, and it was the 51st General Hospital. There were 105 nurses in the unit, and I don't remember how many doctors. So we stayed in Hollandia until I believe June of '45, at which time we left Hollandia for Manila, and we were very happy to think we were going to Manila because that would be civilization, we thought. While we're in New Guinea, we had to wear trousers and long sleeves and all that in Manila, that was so terribly warm and really very, very uncomfortable. So we still had to wear bare trousers at night because of the mosquito control. So we stayed in Manila and were stationed at Fort McKinley Hospital. And we stayed there until the 11th of November 1945, when we left for the States by way of Honolulu. And I was granted a 5-day delay in Honolulu because my fiance was stationed there. And then from there we were arrived in California and were discharged at Fort Sheridan, Chicago, Illinois, on I think it was about November the 26th.
What are some of the different jobs you did as an Army nurse?
I was a staff nurse. I mean, strictly bedside care, taking care of patients.
Did your experiences prepare you for a career after you left the service?
Well, I already had my career, and it certainly made I think broadened our concept of different things and made us much more appreciative of people and just the situation in general.
What was your pay?
When we entered, we were paid $90 a month, and when we were went overseas, we were paid $150 a month. Then our pay after we became first lieutenants, then I don't remember what the first lieutenant pay was. I think it was $175. But one thing that was rather unique in the Army Nurse Corps, one of the rules and regulations was that a girl had to be 30 years old before she could be promoted to a first lieutenant. Now this, I believe, is probably for everyone. Then I think they were lacking in getting volunteers, so finally they had to go ahead and promote. We had more or less a mass promotion.
Was there a minimum age requirement for a second lieutenant?
Well, no, not really. I imagine probably 21, but all of us was at least 21, having graduated from 3 years of nursing.
Were you given equal opportunities for service and education?
I would imagine. I would say yes.
Do you recall any kind of extra training that you were given by the Army, such as operating room procedures?
No, because they were, whatever your prior training had been, is what more or less determined what area that you served in the hospital.
What assignments were generally given to the female nurses, or did it depend on their experience?
Well, just your regular hospital assignments. Of course, we had our chief nurse and the assistant chief nurse, which were administrative, but the rest of us were doing our regular assignments, operating room, staff, nursing, supervisory work.
What was the nature of your housing?
When we arrived in Melanie Bay, beginning, we lived in tents and had foxholes.
Did you put the tents up and make the foxholes?
We didn't, no, but I'm surprised we didn't. And then we later lived in native huts. When we were in Hollandia, we had long barracks that had an overhanging roof to keep the rain out.
By the way, what was the nature of the native huts?
Well, they were built off the ground on, I guess, more or less stakes. And the sides of them, they took the palm fronds and they sort of laced them and put them on big, long pieces of wood or of branches off of the tree, and they just nailed those to the side and overlapped them to reinforce them, so they were very rain repellent. And the same way with the roof.
What other types of housing did you have?
When we were in Manila, then we had lived in Clonsal huts, which were very nice. And we also had native girls, so local girls who, we had housemates, house servants, whatever you like to call them. They did our laundry for us. Whereas in New Guinea, we at first had to do all that ourselves.
What was the nature of your medical care?
Very good. Of course, all of us were young and healthy, so we really didn't need much.
Okay. What was a typical day like for you?
Well, we had to be on duty at 7 o'clock in the morning. So I guess we probably were at breakfast at 6:30 and went out, reported on duty. And we each of us had X number of people that we took care of, and we just administered all of the care that they needed during our period of the day. Sometimes we worked 12 hours, sometimes longer if necessary, and just did the actual bedside nursing. We were on a medical ward, we were on a surgical ward. I did a lot of work on the dermatology unit, where we did a lot of compressions and things like that.
Did you find the weather and just the general living conditions very different from what you were used to here in the States?
Oh, very much so. We didn't have, of course, have any hot water. And the water was limited. We couldn't drink it out of the faucet. And we had just were allowed so much water to wash our clothes in. We were in New Guinea. And of course, the clothing that we wore was rather strange, we thought. We had to wear leggings when we were in Melanie Bay and Hollandia because of the mosquito malaria situation. So in order to look chic, we would cut the leggings down and use white shoe polish. I don't know where we got the white shoe polish, and get them all fixed up with white shoe polish. And then we thought we looked quite nice.
Describe a legging.
It was a canvas piece of material that was probably a foot long. It went from our ankle to our knee. It looked really awful. And it was laced on the side. We wore men's trousers, also men's shoes. And some of the shoes, instead of wearing high tops, when it was really quite warm, we would take a razor blade and cut them down and make them into sandals, and then take shoestrings and lace them and tie them around our ankles, so we would look very, very feminine. We tried to look feminine.
Oh, really? Did you supplement your diet with native foods?
We ate coconuts and bananas. And when we were in Manila, that's where I had my first mango. And it was the most glorious experience I've ever had in my life. And so other than that, though, the Army provided most of the food. Was provided by the Army. As a matter of fact, when we were in, we had no towns in New Guinea as such. They're just names on the map. When we got to Manila, we couldn't eat in any of the restaurants because of the sanitation situation. So we ate primarily just
sea rations?
Well, it all depended upon what the ships brought in from Australia. Sometimes we ate a lot of dried food, dried eggs, And we had a lot of CR Jam and things like that came from Australia. And then they also sent some off to get rabbit and lamb chops and things like that. So our food wasn't too bad, but I always felt that the fellows were so much worse off than we were, so we really didn't want to.
What did you do in your leisure time?
Now, when we were overseas, we had rather nice officers clubs, and they had a they'd have a base club, so where all the different areas would come in for parties. We had Oklahoma came, any number of the musical productions from the States came over, and different kinds of entertainment. But we had we'd have dances. We went swimming a lot when we were in New Guinea. Hollandia had the most beautiful beaches that ever you could ever imagine. Just it would make a marvelous resort area, we always thought. And we played bridge a lot, and we played different Monopoly and when it was raining and all those different things.
Movies, Were they fairly current, or?
And most of the live productions that came were really very high class. Every now and then they would come in with some that were really quite obnoxious, and they were received by everyone. Everybody was just really, I'm trying to think of a word, just did not accept it well at all. I mean, they knew that, I think our idea was conditions were so bad there that we wanted things that were uplifting instead of the base things.
What were some of your memorable experiences?
The thing that comes to mind, first of all, is how very un-GI the Army Nurse Corps was. Now, the regular Army Nurse Corps was GI, I'm sure, but we, who had just volunteered for the duration work, we had no basic training. Somebody asked me how we learned how to salute. We learned that on our own. In fact, it was nothing to see us walking down the street, and one of us would knock her hat off trying to salute somebody. Another thing about saluting, when we were in Hollandia, a Japanese man who'd been hiding out came through our area, and he saluted, and several of the nurses returned his salute, didn't even realize he was a Japanese, which we thought was terribly funny. Then another thing, when we were in Hollandia, I thought was, or in Milne Bay, New Guinea, we had the outdoor bathrooms, and they were outdoor privies. They were 16-hole affairs, and eight of them, you know, back to back. So one of the girls wasn't too fond of one of the chief nurses, so she said, can you imagine my sitting there saying, would you please pass the paper, Selma? And we thought that was quite funny. Then the day that I received my promotion, I was very busy doing a dressing on a patient in Hollandia in our hospital. And they came and told me that I was to report to the colonel's office, our commanding officer. So I said, well, tell him that I'll be there when I get through with my dressing. The doctor said, I think maybe you should probably go now. So I did. And much to my surprise, he presented me with my silver bars. And I don't even think I saluted. So then several friends of mine said, well, I guess you're going to really be GI now, aren't you? So you won't wear the plaid socks that we were wearing, we weren't supposed to be wearing. So I said, yeah, I think I'll wear them. So they brought me some really, really loud ones. So this is how we entertained ourselves. It kept us happy. And then I guess another memorable occasion was when we were at the staging area in Manila waiting to come home, and somebody came through and said they wanted volunteers to fly home, and I said, oh heavens, I wouldn't want to fly all that distance because I thought I wanted to go on the boat, it'd be much safer. So then they said, well, we're going to stop in Hawaii, in Honolulu, and I said, well, Then I immediately volunteered because my fiance was in Honolulu, so then I was granted a 5-day priority en route and missed 3 planes out of Honolulu to get to the States. But I had a very nice general whose charge I was under. He told me that if anything happened to me, that he was in, would take care of me and see that everything went along well. So I didn't have any problems with it. By the way, I think I forgot to say that my maiden name was Manning. And I met the man that I married at Fort Bliss, Texas, 10 days before I left for overseas. And we corresponded. And a year and a half later, I saw him in Hawaii. And then I came back to the States, and he also came back probably 6 months later or something like that.
Were you ever in any immediate danger?
Not from bombing or the enemy, because in the Pacific, there was no female personnel allowed, any of the hospital personnel that was allowed closer to the front lines in a station hospital. And that was back from any of the firing. The evac units were all manned by men. And the reason for our being back that far was because of the Japanese. They were trying to prevent us from being hurt by the Japanese.
Were there ever any problems with the natives?
No, and these natives were really very, very friendly people. They were quite short, had very fuzzy hair, were a chocolatey brown, and they wore a piece of material around their waist, bare at the top, men and women. And the men wore these wide belts with a machete, and they would put a belt around their feet, and that way shinny up the coconut trees and knock off the coconuts and also knock off the bronze to make our native huts with. And then I had the good fortune, I was dating an Australian officer, and he took me to a native village one Sunday where they were having a native powwow, and saw all these different entertainments that they did. And just the men were participating. They had their skin painted with the orange lead paint that they got apparently from some of the off the ship someplace. And they had their heads all filled with feathers and newspapers and all different things in white chalk. And each design of the body meant something. So that was really interesting. They played different games.
Can you compare service careers then with the present?
I really don't think I could. I really don't have any idea how they would compare.
Did you experience conflict between being feminine and being a military professional?
As a military, the only conflict that we experienced being feminine, I believe, was when we were going to our boat to get on board the boat to go overseas. There were 105 of us nurses who were made to walk to the boat. I think we had to walk about 5 miles, and the doctors, of whom there were probably 40 members, all rode. So that was a bad, I felt a rather bad experience. Been very unthinking on their part. But as being a military professional, we were received very well in the States, overseas. The enlisted men really liked us all.
Were there any female doctors in the unit?
No, I don't think that female doctors were accepted in the Army.
Did you use benefits of the GI Bill, or were you entitled to them?
I was entitled to them, but I didn't. I didn't go ahead and continue my education because I was being married.
What demanded the greatest adjustment for you? Uniform dress, living with others, regulations, lack of freedom, terminology?
I believe one of the greatest probably not an adjustment, but it was a revelation to us why we were going overseas was when we were called together for a meeting one day with a group of doctors, at which time one of the doctors advised us that we need not worry about if we became pregnant when we were overseas, because they had a footlocker full of contraceptives, so we would have no problem like that. We were quite shocked, very irate, wondered why, what in the world these men must have had in their minds. Their idea of why we were there, who we were, and what we were. Well, we very soon got all that straightened out with our relationship with them was rather cool, although it was ultimately became quite friendly. We were very good times there. Our living quarters, I believe, was probably one of the most persistent problems. When we were in Melanie Bay, we were sleeping in tents on camp beds with a straw mattress, which they were constantly damp because of the moisture. Our shoes or anything that we had that was leather were covered with a green mold every morning we arose. We had to set them out in the sun and use much shoe polish on to keep them in shape. When we left Melanie Bay and went to Hollandia, we were in more or less the you'd call permanent quarters, but they really weren't. And at which time our director, our chief nurse, had called us to a meeting, and they advised us that since we needed many things for our quarters to make them feminine and homelike, any time that we happened to accept a date with an officer, just to be sure to tell him that we were really in dire need of things to make our quarters livable, such as dressing tables. Well, it was amazing how many dressing tables and chairs and straw mats and parachutes that we received to parachutes to cover the ceilings in our quarters. And it really became quite homey, and we just really felt very attached to it. Our lack of freedom didn't really enter into the picture, because we realized that we were not there for, of course we all enjoyed having a good time and all that, but we weren't there really to have too much freedom, plus the fact there were no towns. The places in beginning were merely names on the map for identification, or no towns or cities or anything like that. Terminology was no problem. I think that, as I said before, and I shall stress, that probably one of the most disagreeable regulations was actually our boat address, because we had to protect ourselves from mooring, and therefore we had to wear long sleeves and trout men's trousers and things like that.
Forgive me for interrupting, Virginia, but I would like to ask Jenny a question. Forgive me, Jenny, for not calling you Genevieve, but we always think of you as Jenny. Jenny, you have told us some very amusing sidelights on a nurse's life in the South Pacific. We have not heard yet, and I would like to ask you to say something in regard to your patients, either people who were well known to history, so to speak, or were important during wartime, or the common GI, though I really can't say that any of them were common. They were all of them uncommonly brave men. And I wonder if you will fill us in a little bit about their story, perhaps a sad story or a happy story. And then, of course, I know that Gina is going to want to ask you last of all about what happened to you after you finished your service overseas, and you can conclude with that.
I believe that the thing that impressed me, and I'm sure all the other nurses, was the attitude of the GIs. They were absolutely the most marvelous group of people, as patients that we ever had. Nobody complained. Everybody was very cooperative, always had a laugh, no matter how bad the situation was. I think probably we all tried to just maintain a cheerfulness, and it wasn't really an artificial cheerfulness, because it was, I think a good attitude was probably one of the most important things to anybody's recovery. And they just were an admirable group of people. I believe that when I was asked before if anything had really affected my life, I think probably all I have to do is reflect back on these men who were out there in suffering, not really suffering, but enduring hardships that were just, it just made ours look like we were living at the Waldorf Astoria. So I believe that was terrible. That was one of the most impressive things. I don't want to get into, I have never really tried to dwell on sad things or anything like that. But one thing that was really rather heartrending, we had a patient who came in and was being forwarded to the United States. Both of his arms were broken. And if you ever saw such a sorry sight, it was really, it was actually funny. He laughed and we laughed, and his first question was, how am I going to love and hold my wife when I get home? Both arms broken. And just various things like that happened. Speaking of important personages, two other girls and I were asked by our commanding officer to be private nurses for General George Kenney. He was probably one of the most disagreeable people that ever was, yet just as so many other people, once you get you are under that little veneer that they present, he was really quite a nice, shall I say, guy, not disrespectful. A thing that was really very funny, the corpsman who was helping us in his care was from Oklahoma, and his name was Engmar. We always called him Eng. He would do anything for us or for anybody. General Kenney had the very bad habit of tossing the cigarettes butts on the floor. We asked him on several occasions to please use the butt can. Engmar became very put out with this and his attitude, and he walked up to one day at his bed and said, "Now, General, if you don't start using the butt can, you're going to have to police the area." And that is another thing that I should bring out. We were very un-GI, the nurse corps was, because no one, the minute that somebody came into our hospital or our tent or our ward under our care, their rank was left outside the door. We never pulled rank on them, but when we did, what we advised or suggested, they did. Very few questions were asked. And we had a very, very happy relationship. After I was discharged, being in, as we always said, away from civilization for almost 2 years, it was really very strange. When we came into Honolulu, we hadn't had hot water in a faucet. We couldn't drink any water out of the faucets if we had faucets over there. Came into Honolulu, and here are cars zooming down the streets. We were walking on the sidewalk. I was absolutely terrified. I wonder if I don't know if I were, had a little jungle shock or what, but it was very terrifying, all this activity, because we weren't used to it, accustomed to any of these things for a couple of years. So it took a little while for us to, for me, I should say, to become adjusted to that. So I returned to my home in South Dakota. I had enough leave to carry me until the 2nd of 3rd of February, 1946, and I guess I was home for about 6 weeks when several friends of mine called and asked me if I would like to go to San Francisco. And so the three of us went to San Francisco. We had no jobs, no apartments, lots of courage. That was another thing that I learned from the Army. We really developed courage. I mean, we were really not, nothing actually, should I say, stopped us. Nothing was a problem. We felt that we could, at least I did, I felt I could, no matter what happened, I was ready. And so I went to San Francisco and worked for 6 months or 8 months until my husband came home from Honolulu, and where he suffered, he always told me, for 2 years in Honolulu, and called me Jenny from New Guinea, and felt terrible to think I was over there living in Towns and he was languishing on the beaches, eating steaks and things like that. And so then I came home and accepted a position with the Veterans Administration in Louisville, Kentucky, where he was. And a year later, we went.
What was the year?
1948. I started with the VA in December of 1946 and worked for a year. And then I was in the hospital for 9 months with a little spot on my lung. I was discharged in July and I was married 20 years ago, August of 1948, and have lived happily ever after.
You have worked, though, I know, since...
I hadn't worked. I didn't know. As soon as I was married, then I didn't work until my husband died. And he worked, and I mean, when he died, then I took over the food brokerage company, which he had run quite successfully, and I continued that for 15 years, at which time things in the business world were changing considerably, and I thought that it would be much better for me if I would just sell the business, since my son was really not interested in being in sales. And I then started work with the public health department, and I worked with the public health department for 13 years. Was very happy with the decision I made.
Well, thanks very much for answering my question, Jenny.